From your world news headquarters on the World Wide Web, it's time for your daily dose of sanity. This is the Maria Heller Show. Maria Heller is a published author, founder of the Universal Wheel, a lifestyle and philosophy based on our interconnectedness to all living things, a Reiki master, and delivers the news with spiritual views. How many intuitive news decoders, animal rights activists, and vegetarian broadcasters are there? Just one, Maria. Maria has provided independent news for a smart audience for over 13 years now on the Maria Heller Show, available at maria.net.
M-E-R-I-A.net.
And now, here is your host, the mouth that roars, Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to the Maria Heller Show. I've got an old friend on the show. Oh, my God, I'm almost embarrassed to say how many years it's been since she's been with me on the show. Time flies when you're having fun. None other than, as I refer to her, Catherine Awesome Fitz. She's a former assistant housing secretary under Bush Sr. She's also the editor of Solari.com. And there's a live link right here. Please click through and check out Catherine's work. Her work is fantastic. So after all these years, I think it was 2004. Oh, my God. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Maria. It's always a pleasure to be on your show. I love your show.
Oh, I'm sorry that you slipped through the cracks for the past, I don't know, 8 years.
Well, I figured when you were ready for me, you'd call me again.
Well, so. Please keep in touch because you have no idea. I don't even remember, you know, you remember that old movie, If This Is Monday, This Must Be Belgium? That's kind of been what my life has been like since I started this show in 2000. And I'm like, in July, I'm starting my 15th year, and I only thought I'd be doing this for a couple of months just for fun.
Right.
So here we are. Now, you know, I think the last time you were on the show, and you'll get a kick out of the story, I believe it was the 4th of July, you were kicking off your Take Your Money Out of the Big Banks movement.
Yes, July 2004, we had a big article, you know, What Would Jesus Do?
And right.
It was all about, okay, well, let's look at where the real trouble is coming from. And we're financing it because, you know, the big banks were just rich with the flow of our deposits in business. So we tried to tell everybody, hey, you know, and the biggest problem wasn't that we were financing the criminality. The biggest problem was you had thousands of great, honest banks and credit unions who weren't getting our support. And if they got our support, they could cycle money to the local economy because the local economy was being choked for capital.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my attitude is you got all these great guys over here who you're not supporting. Let's pull our money from the criminals and put it with the good guys.
Mm, well, you know, I did just that after our show.
I remember.
And I blew into Bank of America. like a wild woman. And, you know, the bank was crowded and you have to talk to the teller. And at that time I had some serious money in the bank.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if you don't have money in the bank, they don't really care whether you breathe or you don't. And I said to the teller, I want to withdraw my money. And the teller immediately called the bank manager. And the bank manager came out all tripping all over herself. Miss Heller, have we done anything wrong? You know, has anybody done this, that? And I just opened up my big, deep voice so everyone in the bank could hear it. And I just lambasted Bank of America. And I said, I'm taking my money out of here so all these kids will have a job tomorrow. I said, and I'm not keeping my money in a drug laundering, money laundering bank like this. And what was really funny, she just told a girl, write her a check, and she walked away. She didn't even say another word to me.
Right.
And I could tell everybody in the bank was probably feeling like a nerve attack. But what was interesting is when I went over to Desert Schools Credit Union to deposit my money and they saw the Bank of America check, he asked me why I left Bank of America, so I got to give my speech all over again. So then he called all the other tellers over and he says, you need to listen to this woman. So I got to say it again.
Fantastic.
So, you know, and I know that a lot of my listeners at the time followed suit. But I tell people, when you take your money away from these people, even if it's Hobby Lobby or whoever, it's not enough to just take your money. You need to tell them why.
Right.
You know, you need to take a stand. And people have got to lose that fear. And I know you certainly don't have any fear.
No.
You know, and truthfully, you know, the only vote we have is our money. And knowing
it is. Actually, we have our attention. And I can't tell you how important, our admiration is.
Mm-hmm.
If you literally say, you know, I'm going to shun people who are doing these things that I disapprove of.
Right.
That is powerful.
Right.
Very, very powerful. So there's money, there's shunning, there's attention, there's all sorts of stuff. Right now, the people who are leading this are the most admired people in our society.
Absolutely. And everybody's waiting for a hero. And I'm like, you got to be the hero. And it's funny. You know, talk about a twist of fate. I live in a very small town, Catherine. So my credit union is actually in a small kiosk inside a Walmart superstore.
Really?
And I have let them have it so many times. Because I won't shop Walmart if they're giving me something for free and I can't keep my mouth shut in Walmart. And every single time I complain to the bank manager, why are you inside this big box criminal store that has broken the economy of our town? With all the empty stores around, when is this bank going to move? You know, I continue to put the pressure on.
Good.
And
I just wanted to say up at... we have a section called Bank Intimate. It's at salary.com/article/banks.
Right.
I'll send you the link. And one of the, there's this something called How to Find a Local Bank.
Right.
And it walks you step by step about how to find a good local bank or credit union. You know, because it's not enough to leave the bad ones. You need to find the good ones and
Absolutely.
Really support them.
Absolutely.
So, but the other thing is there's an article called Why Did I Wait So Long? About a minister out in the San Francisco Bay Area. Who walks into Bank of America and delivers them a letter on why she's leaving them.
Right. Well, now
so
I have some...
She walks through the steps about how you might, you know, if somebody wants some help.
Right.
You know, and then we have an article and an audio seminar, Where Would Jesus Bank, which is...
Right. Well, we know what Jesus thought of the money changers. Nobody has to surprise us with that one.
Well, that's what got him crucified. I can say 2,000 years later, it's still going on.
Right. But, you know, when we talked about this all those years ago, one of the things I strongly remember you saying, so we'll take a little trip down memory lane because my brain does have quite the data bank in it. You said to me, because at the time people were protesting and whatnot, and you had said, the people that have your money don't care if you're out in the street protesting because at the end of the day, they have your money.
Right.
So your protest doesn't mean anything.
Right.
And, you know, that stuck with me all these years, and God knows how many times I must have repeated it on my show. And now, you know, looking at B of A and the problems they're having, you know, they are closing in my town. They're closing the branch they had here. Yeah, they're closing 9 little branches in Arizona. So they're getting bought out by Washington Mutual or something, but doesn't affect me because I don't bank there. And seeing all their fines and whatever, and I think people are waking up to their reputation. And I'm pretty sure I read last year, I think after the big bank bailout, a lot of people did start taking their money and putting it in local banks or credit unions.
You've certainly seen more consciousness about it. But I still, you know, I think the thing, if anything has really helped with this, Maria, it's going to be Edward Snowden.
Oh, yeah.
Because suddenly, you know, the hardest challenge I had in terms of communication is explaining how dangerous it is when someone you can't trust has your data.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's slowly beginning to dawn on us the danger of all our financial data being with someone. The head of the MIT Media Lab once said, in a digital age, data about money is worth more than money. And so the invasion of privacy and the access to that knowledge is tremendously powerful. And I think more and more people are beginning to realize, oh, I want to be with people I can trust.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be with people who can be trustworthy. Mm-hmm. You know, not to say that that's going to, you know, if you look at what the intelligence agencies are doing, you know, everybody is going to, you know, when they're coming into the dark fibers and nothing is private, at the same time, you know, there are layers of this thing, and I think everyone's saying, oh, you know something? I want to be with honest people. Mm-hmm. I can't afford in an environment like this to be with people for whom I'm expendable, irrelevant, anonymous, or, you know, it always shocks me. I'll never forget when John Corzine went to MF Global, and then when they went down, I couldn't believe all these people who kept their accounts there and thought they'd be safe.
I know. Well, you know, some people are just stupid. What else can you say? You know, I mean,
we're all in a trance that mm-hmm. assumes, oh, the government is going to make sure that certain standards apply.
Yeah,
well, no, those rules have changed now. Mm-hmm. So the government's not going to make sure those rules apply. In fact, they're in first in line, and you're going to be the loser. So you've got to think a lot more carefully about what's safe and what's not.
Absolutely. You know, that's why I talk about Bernie Madoff. You know, he made off with the money. And why he went to jail when other bankers didn't, because he ripped off the 1%. And that's a no-no. But look at all the money that's been sucked out of all of us with this financial coup d'etat. What were you saying before the show? How many trillions of dollars?
Yeah, my estimate is it's about $40
trillion. $40 trillion.
$40 trillion. You had $4 trillion go missing from the federal accounts between 98 and 2002. Hmm. And then we had the bailouts. And then there was the pump and dump of the equity market, and there's some other various things. But my back of the, you know, it's totally back of the envelope, Maria, but my back of the envelope is that between 1994 and 2008, the bailouts, you know, about $40 trillion got shifted out.
Right, and where did the money go?
Well, that's the $64,000 question, one we all love to know.
Right.
I think a lot of it has gone through what I call the black budget. You know, if you look at what happened, grossly oversimplified, we issued a bunch of fraudulent paper. We used that paper to take over the governmental mechanism, and then we paid off the paper with the governmental mechanism, with the bailouts. You know, that extinguished all the fraudulent paper we'd issued to kind of take over with. This is a leveraged buyout of North America, in essence, is what it looks like. Now, if the money went down the black budget, then that money is going for invisible weaponry and space programs. You know, and that technology is owned and controlled by private corporations, not by government, even though government funded it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one. The second question is, how much of it went into the equivalent of an endowment? So just talking theoretically, if I put $40 trillion in an endowment, then, you know, at 5%, I have enough money to run a global government on a for-profit privatized model.
Uh-huh. Well,
so,
what did you, you know,
how much went into the endowment and how much went to weaponry and space programs? Your guess is as good as mine. And, you know, underground facilities, and not to mention global spraying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone is paying for a global spraying program, which is prohibitively expensive.
Absolutely, and it's every day.
Right.
Well, you know, what happened? Didn't Obama promise us transparency?
Well, here's the thing, and you know it well. Obama is, you know, the formal face of governments are, if anything, you know, those are not the leaders.
Mm-hmm.
All I can say, you know, it's, I think of Obama as sort of a marketing arm of the shadow government.
Right.
So I never, you know, during a presidential election, I vote for people based on what I think they have the power to do and the message I'm trying to send.
Mm.
But Obama never had the power to implement any of the things he promised.
Well, you know, everybody's looking forward to 2016 when we get either Jeb or Hillary, and thinking that's going to change things.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I don't know what you think, but I thought the attack on Chris Christie was kind of the Clintons and the Bushes teaming up together.
Well, but Chris Christie,
making sure they didn't have any
right.
competition.
Right, but I think Christie's as guilty as sin anyway. And aren't they all? You know, but it's easy to see how quickly they can destroy one of their own for their own methods.
Right.
You know, their own ideas. You know, when we were talking about this all these years ago, and I remember how you were pleading, basically, for people to wake up and get their money out of these banks. And yet, so many people were caught by surprise. You know, how come nobody told us this?
You know, it's quite astonishing to me. To this day, I still don't know what to say to somebody who will be looking me in the face and say, why did no one tell us?
Right. Right. We've been screaming about this for how long?
Well, you know, it's almost as though there seems to be a desire to have the people stealing from you warn you. Mm. And no one else's warning is good enough.
Right. Well, they're not. It's like waiting for them to give us the evidence on 9/11 or JFK. They're not going to give it to us because they're the ones that have it. And it's none of our concern.
Part of this is getting clear about who, you know, most people in our society cannot see who or what is giving them energy versus draining them.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, if you walk around the world, you know, I've got a little tool in my head called How the Money Works. As I walk around the world, I see most people supporting and giving energy to the people who are stealing from them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of like an entire civilization in a Patty Hearst syndrome.
Right. That was my thought exactly.
Right.
You know, and it really is crazy when you look at it. You know, here, even in my little town, I mean, when this super Walmart got put in, it totally decimated Main Street.
What town are you in, Maria?
I live in a town in Arizona called Payson. It's about 15,000 people.
How far? What's the nearest city?
Phoenix is about an hour south.
Okay.
And, you know, when I look at the people shopping in there and I look at, you know, the local paper, people complaining of the empty stores, you know, why don't they do something with Main Street? You know, I constantly post my answers in the newspaper, and then, man, you should see the attacks I get.
Really?
The hate comes off the charts. Because I said, whoever voted for the Super Walmart to come in, well, you got what you deserved. And if you're going to shop there, nothing's going to change. You know, people don't understand. That money doesn't stay in town. That money's long gone.
Right.
And, you know, it truly was. And, you know, I think it was Robert Greenwald years ago that did a movie on Walmart, and I had interviewed him. And he called it a neutron bomb for any neighborhood it arrived in. And I've lived to see that, you know, myself. And even though it's really the only store in town, I have never spent $1 in there. You know, I'd rather shop online than have to give them my money. I don't even like walking in there to go to my bank, and they're fully aware of that.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I live in a place where avoiding Walmart is really impossible.
Mm.
I mean, you can buy a lot online. We drive an hour and 15 minutes over to Memphis to do a lot. But if you're here, it's pretty hard, and there are a lot of rural communities that are like that.
Well, I can agree, but, you know, I've managed to not use it in, you know, I would say in the total of 7 years that I've lived here.
Good for you.
You know, I'd rather just get in my car if it's something I can't buy online or, you know, in the regular grocery store or the regular hardware store or whatever. I'll just go drive to Phoenix. You know, I'll just make a list. You know, you've got to realize that, first of all, we buy a lot of stuff we don't need.
Right.
So I try to not buy things that I don't need. Okay.
Right.
I'm not a big spender. Okay. Not that I have the money to be a big spender. But if I did, I still would be the same. My sister told me that I was cheap. I told her I'm frugal. There's a difference. But I think that a lot of Americans now, out of necessity, are spending less. And
household income is falling and expenses are rising. That's what I call the slow burn.
Right.
And I would say that one of my most consistent predictions, you know, for when I first met you, everyone was worried about collapse. I was saying, don't worry about collapse. Mm. You need to worry about slow burn. And slow burn is when your expenses are steadily rising and your incomes are steadily falling. And it's a squeeze.
Right.
And what's interesting is technology creates unbelievable opportunities to lower our expenses, to, you know, to deflate our income statement.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got to, you know, we've got to really focus and think in terms of, you know, I grew up in a world where if I wanted money, I just went out and made more. I didn't worry about expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was in the middle of litigating with the federal government, I spent a lot of time with some of the women in my family who are geniuses at, you know, squeezing another penny out of the income,
right,
out of the expense budget. And I learned, you know, wait a minute, I need to rethink this, because in a deflationary environment, you know, when incomes are being deflated and things are being squeezed by technology, then you want to be very inventive and creative and really focus on expenses and getting them down.
Absolutely.
In business, if you're not constantly re-engineering your telecommunications for a lower price, then, you know, you're missing a really great opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
I learned that one the hard way. Okay. The very hard way, and then found out I was overpaying by $10,000 a year to my server company. $10,000.
Right.
To me, that's a whole lot of money.
Right.
And just doing the investigative work, you know, just so happened that this morning I woke up and my heat wasn't working in my house. And I had it, you know, somebody look at it 2 months ago, a similar problem. And then I said, okay, chances are good I'm going to have to invest in a new furnace.
Right.
So the first thing I did is I went online and started pricing them, doing comparative shopping. I want to make sure I don't get flipped. So if that's going to make me cheap, then I happily be called cheap, because to me, I want to know before, you know, a repairman comes in and says, oh, it's going to be $5,000, when truthfully it could be $2,000.
Right.
But if you don't take responsibility for doing your homework when you're dealing with anybody, even buying a used car, then you're, if you get burned, you get burned because you didn't do the homework.
Well, it comes back to the quality of the people that you do business with.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I would say that I was trained, Maria, to always care enormously about the quality of the people that I do business with. So, you know, I'm an investment advisor. The first thing I do when I look at a company is I go look at the board and the management.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't pass the test, I don't look at the financials. Because what you want to know is you're with really quality people.
Mm-hmm.
Who are competent and ethical and know how to protect the company from people who aren't.
Exactly.
And if you don't have that, you've got nothing, you know, and so it matters. You know, I don't really care whether the government guarantees the deposits. I want to know, okay, who governs my bank? Who manages it? Who do I talk to? You know, who do I deal with?
Mm-hmm.
And are these ethical people? Because ultimately the law is not just in a courthouse or in the law books. A law is in our commitment to be lawful.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely.
Without that, you know, it doesn't matter what you write down on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have the people and the culture to back it up. So, you know, we all have to get very picky about, you know, who we let in to mess with our plumbing, because if they're not competent and ethical, it's just going to make it worse.
Absolutely. And, well, that's where referral comes in. You know, I have one handyman that I trust totally. And, you know, he's the one that recommended the heating guy to me. So I felt confident with the heating guy because he, you know, it's going to go back to the person that referred you if it's not on the up and up.
Well, it's really funny because I live in Hickory Valley, Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
And there's a wonderful guy here we all adore who is a master of secondhand appliances.
Mm-hmm.
He knows appliances like the back of the hand. And one of the things he, you know, and very rightly so, he's convinced that if you get things which are very simple and mechanical, they can last forever if you take proper care of them. Well, you know, it works as long as he's around. So we've gotten to the point where if we need a new appliance, we just ask him what to buy.
Right.
If he doesn't recommend it, it's not happening.
Well, that's a good idea. But, you know, we've moved so far away from, you know, when... You know, you and I are in the same age group. You know, when we were younger, and I was working in the business world, and most of my business jobs, you know, you're just customer service involved.
Right.
And, you know, those old ethics of, you know, the customer's always right and people bending over to make the customer happen or happy. And you look today and all I hear is complaints from people of poor customer service no matter what the business is. It's almost like... they know you're stuck giving them your money and you don't have any value to them.
Oh, now, here's the interesting thing. I find, I concentrate on businesses that I think have great customer service and great ethics, but I find, you know, there's incredible customer service, especially on the retail side, mm-hmm. you know, because it's become so incredibly competitive.
Right.
And one of the things that scared me when I sort of left doing, you know, big business and went out on my own in the 90s was I discovered that, you know, people were giving up their political freedoms because they were getting so much attention from customer service. So their political choices were being withdrawn as their consumer choices were exploding. Now that worked as well as the money. You know, we were in a bubble and everybody had plenty of money. Now that they have no money, they don't, you know, they're not getting the same level of attention now the consumption attention is being withdrawn.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's very painful. And now, of course, they're noticing, oh, wait a minute, what happened to my political choices?
Right. Right.
Anyway.
Well, since it's been almost 10 years since we talked, what do you think of how it seems to me to have been very quick, the destruction of our economy? And maybe that's because I'm older. You know, I would say over the past 10 years, everything so many people predicted for so long has already happened.
Well, the fraud was brewing. I mean, the serious fraud that financed the black budget started in the 40s,
mm-hmm.
and it's just been growing, 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 and it was kept to the poor neighborhoods. So, you know, the poor neighborhoods have been taking it on the chin for decades. Now it's, you know, with this housing bubble, it's really moved into the upper echelon. So now we see middle and upper middle class neighborhoods being completely rolled by mortgage fraud and the sort of the pump and dump of the economy and the debasement of the currency. So now it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, this is a cancer that's been growing and it just sort of flew up the S-curve. But it took decades to build the base and it's been brewing for a long time. And that's why, you know, as you know from my history, I've had to deal with that infrastructure in a variety of capacities. The latest in the 90s when I litigated I litigated that situation went on from 95 to 2006.
Mm.
So, you know, a lot of times when I see what's going on today, I feel like saying to everyone, welcome to my world.
Right. Right.
Because, you know, it's funny, you'll see, for example, I made the decision in 99. That's it. I'm walking away from the healthcare industry. It's just like, goodbye.
Right.
I need another plan. So I want nothing to do with you guys. I'll go over here. I'll figure out another plan. And now I'm beginning to see that, you know, thousands of people doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, you know, 10 years later than where I was.
Right.
So we're all coming. Now, here's the question, Maria. If you look at the changes that we're going through, I would say we're about 10% of the way. Because if you look at what's going to roll out in the next couple years,
uh-huh.
It's much more mind-boggling than anything we've dealt with.
Wow.
So,
that's,
you know,
not boding too well for the future, then.
What?
We're only 10% into their plan. God only knows what they've got for the next 90%.
Well, here's the big question, and it's not just the leadership. Last year, a billion smartphones shipped.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
And so, you know, we have in the last, since the middle of 2011, we now have increased, you know, by 750 million, the number of people who have access to the internet and are on smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time in many, many decades, it's not the North American consumer market, the European consumer market, that's the biggest, most powerful consumer markets. We're reorganizing the global consumer. So you now have, you know, we should have shortly 2 billion people on smartphones or computers on tablets, and that's a new consumer market called people online,
mm-hmm.
okay? And it's reorganizing everything in incredible ways because now you're talking about your phone, your media device, and your financial transaction device all being one device and integrating in ways that many of us don't even begin to understand.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that device can use all sorts of entrainment technology and mind control and, you know, God knows what else.
Right.
So we're talking about and we're rolling out the technology that can literally digitize everybody and everything and connect it. So, you know, if you think Snowden was invasive, what do you see, you know, when everything in your house is digitized and is on, you know, it's the whole planet is spy chipped.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's...
And we've got drones flying overhead.
Right. It's like, oh, my God, I was hoping I'd be dead before all of this happened. But, hey, I'm still here. But you know what? All we can do is shine the light on it, like we've been doing. Okay. And when people say, oh, I didn't know that. And I'm like, what have I been screaming about for 35 years? You know, I remember I was transferring some VHS tapes into DVD format that I had. And in 1990, I did an Earth Day event in New York. And I was speaking probably in front of 25,000 people. And I catched the machine right at the point where I'm speaking from the platform on a gorgeous beach about the dangers of nuclear energy, you know, the same things that we're now living in. And
right.
You know what? When I looked at that, I said, oh, my God, that was 1990, and I'm still saying the same thing, word for word. And I realized, oh, my God, it's been like 20-something years, and now we're living in the stuff that I talked about 20, 30 years ago. You know, Fukushima, you know, what's going on in New Mexico, you know, the oil spills. I mean... It really gets frustrating, and I remember standing there watching myself speak as tears rolled down my face.
Wow.
And I think the tears were just maybe a mix of frustration and just disgust, just feeling like, oh, my God, how many years have I been saying the same thing?
Well, you know, I look at all of this spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
So, I remember I had a dear, dear friend who developed cancer and died, and I was with her through the process of her dying. And, you know, when you're with, she was a very spiritually powerful person, very beautiful person.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're with someone who dies in that, who has that kind of power, it's kind of like you go into a halfway, you know, you're in a dimension that's between the two dimensions.
Yeah.
And you really look at things in a very different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a very tremendous reminder that, oh, you know, if you look at the spiritual powers, they have all the power.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I'm a Christian, so I really do believe we have the victory. And you know, the one thing each one of us can do is to exercise our free will. And exercise our free will in a way that says, okay, you know, I know that we can have heaven on earth. I'm going to bring it in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's each one of us has to make that decision. Each one of us has to do it. But one of the things I've learned in my life is you don't have to go along. If something's wrong, you just don't have to go along with it.
Absolutely.
If every one of us refused to go along with it, it couldn't be done.
Absolutely. It's called non-participation, which I scream about. That's my new scream for the past 2 years. I get a new scream every now and then. And just tell
just
people,
do it.
Instead of waiting for them to give us labels on GMO food, just don't buy it. We don't need their stinking labels, okay?
Right.
Just don't buy it. That's going to say more than all these petitions and all this time, laws and this and that. Just don't buy it. It's called non-participation.
Right.
You know, if you have a man that doesn't believe a woman has a right to her own body, just don't have sex with him. I mean, these are easy solutions. Am I the only one that thinks this way? Am I a simpleton? I mean, sometimes I just wonder. I say, I see the answer so clearly. Just don't participate in it.
Well, here's the thing. You and I are in accord on all of this, and I don't know. What I don't know is why it's so hard. I don't get it. I don't see the... And I think what it comes back to is you either believe your soul is immortal or not.
Well,
it's almost a pricing issue.
Oh, that's a good one.
If you believe your soul is immortal, then you don't do it.
Right.
Why would I? I mean, I will never forget. There's a famous scene I have with that online book, Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits. And I wrote up this story because it was such a magical moment. Now that I look back on it, it didn't feel magical at the time. Uh-huh. But I had a very successful company. We were targeted by the Department of Justice. They were trying to steal all of our software and shut us down. It was a very ugly, you know, because they were using criminal methods. They were trying mm-hmm. to frame us. It was very ugly. Anyway, so we had an insurance company, and I had error and omissions insurance, and they were trying to abrogate their obligations. They were being dirty. Mm-hmm. And so, but I got in a situation. So finally, they started filing state lawsuits, and suddenly I had to defend in all these different states. So finally I had to go along with bringing the insurance company in. So anyway, so I ended up in a room with 12 different lawyers and this law firm that the insurance company was trying to stick in with an attorney that I didn't know and I didn't trust. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there, and I have my general counsel, who's a pretty good egg. And so she and I are both women, and I've got these 12 lawyers, and they're all sitting on the other side of the table. And it was pretty funny. And so so at one point they said, well, you know, we think you can blame a subcontractor for this. So, you know, we're suggesting that you put the blame on them. I said, wait a minute. I had a contract with them that if there's a political issue, we were responsible. Mm-hmm. You know, 'cause this is not meritorious. This is just pure politics.
Right.
And they said, yeah, but if you look at how the contract's written, we think you can wiggle out. I said, I don't wiggle out. I gave them my word. I don't care I don't care about the written contract. I gave them my word. That's my word.
Wow. They must have thought you were crazy.
Well, if you don't go along with doing this and break your word, we're going to refuse to defend you, and then you're going to go to jail. So it was too frustrating for words. I was sick of dealing with people who didn't believe in the law.
Right.
So I said, gentlemen, you've never worked with me before, so we have to get the ground rules established. I said, let me explain how I work. I said, I'm obedient to the laws of God, and there's nothing you can do or say
right.
It will make me violate them.
Mm-hmm.
You get it? And I said, if that means I'm going to jail, I have no problem, because then I can organize the last group of entrepreneurs I need to run the country when it falls.
Mm.
Because apparently it will fall. I said, and the other question I have is, why are you lawyers? You don't believe in the law.
Mm-hmm.
And they all looked at their $2,000 shoes.
Right.
And are you ready for this? Several months later, the lawyer that, you know, they were trying to stick in to represent me told me that when I had done that, it occurred to him that we might win.
Hmm.
And I said, so you ordered me to do something that if I did it would convince you we were going to lose?
Right. Huh.
What kind of behavior is that?
Well, you know what they
anyway, but here's when you stand, the universe organizes around you.
I agree. I totally
so
agree.
So your stand on Walmart is a perfect example. You say, I'm not going there.
Right. And people know. Look, my older sister always said to me, we had a good talk. She's a couple of years older than me the last time she visited. And she said to me, you know, when you were a child, she said, because we were five girls, she says, it used to really bother me that if we all wanted to play a game or something and you didn't want to do it, you would just say, no, I'm not doing it. And you would never change your mind and you would ruin the fun for the rest of us. So this is right after she confessed to me how angry she is over, you know, being a people pleaser all her life.
Right.
And she said, and you're still that way. Okay. I will never do anything that goes against my conscience or that I don't want to do. And the people that really know me know, only ask Maria once because it's useless asking her a second time.
Right.
But I also had said to her, but who was happy and who wasn't? You know, there's certain things that I just don't waver on, and that's just the way it is. You know, I have certain views and beliefs that are never going to change. And yes, like you, I believe the soul is immortal, or as my teacher used to say, if we all knew what walked alongside us every day, we would fear nothing.
Oh, is that beautiful?
Right. So, you know, people say to me, Maria, aren't you afraid you're going to get arrested or shot? I mean, sometimes my friends go out with me on a social occasion, and they're looking over their shoulders because they're with me. Okay. And I said, you know what? My father taught me they can only fear no man, he used to say. They can only kill your body. They can't touch your soul.
Right.
And that's the way I was raised. And I believed him. He was my father. I said, my father's not going to lie to me. He must have been telling me the truth. So I don't live in fear, but I also don't see that I have to abide by what people consider normal and the law and whatnot. To me, I just choose not to participate. You know, my answer is no. You know, he's 2 billion smartphones. Catherine, I don't have a cell phone. I haven't had one, don't intend to ever get one. I don't want my life interrupted.
I have one, but I only use it to make calls when I leave in the car.
I mean, I see people at the gym talking on their phone, okay? I'm like, what? If you can't be fully present to your workout because you have to talk on your phone, you know you're going to get hurt, and I find it very rude, okay? So maybe that's the way I am, and people are like, well, what do you do when you're in your car? I said, I sing to my radio like I have since I was 17. I'm in peace. Okay. Now, what do you do if you get stuck? I said, I do the same thing I've done for 50 years. I wait for somebody to stop. And guess what? They all have cell phones. Okay. So I don't need the bother or the expense because people are happy to let you use theirs.
Right.
You know, but I don't want the tracking. I don't want the interruption in my flow. You know, I have to have peace in my life. Okay. Especially
right. You have tracking and you have entrainment.
Exactly, and I'm not a Pavlovian dog, you know. That's right. The other part of it. I told my kids, you know, an emergency is somebody's dead or somebody's bleeding. And if somebody's dead, guess what? They're still going to be dead when I get home and hear that message on my answering machine.
Right.
Okay, so far I haven't been able to raise the dead. Anything is possible, but so far I haven't been able to do it. Catherine, let's take a short break. When we get back, let's talk about where do we go from here. Everybody's listening. Everybody knows the state of our economy. What can we do? Where do we go from here? So everybody stay with us. Catherine and I will be right back. Okay, welcome back. I'm speaking with Catherine Austin Fitz of Solari.com, S-O-L-A-R-I.com. If you're listening to this at Gary Knowles Network or you're listening to this on The People's Voice out of the UK, please note that I do 4 shows a week. My shows, as you've noticed, no advertising, no government or corporate funding, just you. And I depend on people's integrity to support what I do. That might make me crazy, but that's the kind of person I am. I always believed from the start of the show many years ago that people would be willing to pay for truth. And so far, you guys haven't disappointed me. So check out Catherine's work because, as you can tell just by this interview alone today, her work is excellent. A lot of you did refer me to the video that Catherine's got. Lots of videos on YouTube. One you might want to pump in there. It's an hour and a half. It's called The UFO Economy. Well worth listening to. And then you get to see Catherine's cute face. Okay, Catherine, before the break, that's my little spiel there. Before the break, we all know where we are, okay? I mean, I've lost all the equity in my home, which I was counting on to retire on. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows we're not getting any interest on our money in the bank. It's like a joke. Lots of my friends working 2, 3, 4 jobs for minimum wage trying to pay their bills. Right. Where do we go from here? How can we change what's happening?
Well, the first thing is the more people who are conscious of what's happening, the better.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, our options expand the more of us there are, particularly when we start to get to, you know, enough people in a place who can impact the municipal and the state budgets. Because a lot of our economic problems roll around to the fact that we're paying taxes to entities that are not working in our favor.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime we can organize to affect political change, you know, with a critical mass of people who are conscious, that's great. The first thing I say to everybody is sit down and do a budget, not for your money, but for your time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then when you look at your time, the first thing you need to ask is, where are you investing time that you're not getting a good return on? So, for example, turn off your TV.
Right.
So look at all the things in terms of your time that's draining you. Are you associating with people who are draining you? You know, are you associating with people who depress you, who hurt you in any way? Anything you can do to protect your time. And so when you look at your time budget, say, okay, where can I get time in my budget to either start to do things or invest time in learning in things that will give you more energy. Mm-hmm. Okay? So we're trying to, the step number one is to improve the return on your time. And what I think a lot of people are going to find, there is a whole bunch of activities and a whole bunch of people you need to cut out of your life right now. Mm-hmm. Because they're not giving you energy. And if you look more deeply, a lot of them are not only you're giving energy to things that are making your world worse. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, you know, for example, if anybody's planning on spending a whole lot of time and money on the presidential elections, forget it. It's a complete waste of your time. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with anything that will give you real political power.
Right.
You know, so just save the time, save the money. All those marches you're talking about going on,
right.
You know, same thing. So the first thing is see if you can't find in your time budget a couple of hours a week where you can, you know, you can get that time to take care of yourself. The number one most important thing you need to do if you find some of that time is you need to, if you're not doing it now, do everything in your power to make sure you have plenty of the best nutrition in the world. And you know, whether that's growing a garden or hooking up with the farmer's markets or changing your diet, whatever it is, you cannot afford not to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is the greatest danger to everybody who's listening to this is environmental pollution and bad nutrition or bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whenever I sit down and look at my habits, I always find room for improvement.
Yeah, who doesn't? Who doesn't?
But we have the power to do, you know, if we organize our time and our budgets to make sure that we have excellent health, we have the power to do a lot. So if you look at this country, imagine if everybody woke up today and said, that's it, I'm not eating junk food or, you know, soda.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. You know, it would be revolutionary, and it would start to put a lot more money in the pockets of people who are growing food locally.
Right. Well, it would also clear up the fog in their brain from all the crap they're eating to make them start thinking about what else is going on.
Right. Now, there's a whole world of things you can do with alternative health practices to build your immune system and to detox. We don't need to go through all of them, but but you need to get really radical about your health because you're in the middle of a war and you're not going to win unless you're healthy.
Right. Absolutely. Right?
And you can't look to the traditional medical systems to make you healthy. You have to be your own doctor. You have to take charge.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one. Number two, on the money, I think that the number one thing I see that people need to do is invest in themselves and in their family to build the skills we need to be economically relevant. So I'm sitting talking to you. I've got my feet on the desk, Maria.
Uh-huh.
And the desk, I just bought the desk from Etsy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what Etsy is?
Yes, I do.
Okay. You said yes, you do?
Well, yeah, but I just recently found out about it, so you might as well tell people about it.
Okay, so Etsy is a website that markets, you know, the product of individual craftsmen and artists online. So I bought, this is a desk made by a carpenter up in Oregon. It's made, it's an old, you know, sort of farm wood kind of wood on very modern metal legs, and it's quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very, the design is quite elegant. You know, so it's sort of old-timey and new slick together. Anyway, but I found it on Etsy. It was my first big Etsy purchase.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out about Etsy because the mayor of Rockville, Illinois, I think it's Rockville or Rockford, Illinois, contacted Etsy to see if they couldn't help him redevelop his economy. Well, it's funny, people who shop at all the big box stores,
right.
I've turned them on to Etsy, and they go to Etsy saying, oh, well, this is stupid, you know, I don't,
right.
And they get there and they're like, wow, this stuff is really great.
And isn't that ETSY?
ETSY, Etsy.com.
That's what I thought.
So, you know, now what you see on Etsy are people who spent a lifetime learning to do something. You know, some of them I shouldn't say lifetime, but you're talking about, and now what we're seeing with the new technology is all sorts of different tools and technology like 3D printing, new fabrication technology, new materials that is suddenly allowing the individual proprietor or small business to get back in the game. Mm-hmm. So part of it is learning about, okay, where is technology going and how can I use that to get me as an individual or small business person back in the game. Mm-hmm. So I was just mentioning the guy that everybody goes to here for the secondhand appliances. When I tell you, that guy is never, never lacking in things to do.
Right. Everybody. Well, I agree. And I tell people, you know, I have a lot of young people that ask me, you know, teenagers, what should I do? And I tell them, learn a trade. You know, and entrepreneurship.
Learn as many as, you know, keep learning.
Right.
Keep learning because the new technologies are going to give, mm-hmm. you know, they create as much opportunity. New technologies should be decentralizing.
Right.
But you have to keep learning.
Absolutely.
You can't, right. You can't hold on to the past. The big wrap up we did, you know, we do a poster every year, and our poster this year is Breakaway. Mm. And I think you saw it on the website.
Yes,
and
I did.
That's because when you have this kind of technology that changes everything, you know, there's enormous opportunity is opening up, and you know, many of the things we've all done historically are now being automated. A recent study just said that 40% to 50% of the existing jobs are going to be automated in the next decade.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine, we only have a minute or two left, but before we wrap up, I definitely want to get you back on the show in the next couple of months, if that's okay.
Sure.
we could talk forever.
Yeah, just keep learning because this is going to be a very entrepreneurial process.
Right.
And change is upon us, and you know, changes can be scary, but it can be an opportunity too.
Absolutely. It's the only constant we have, so we've got to learn to change with it.
Right.
You sounded like you were going for a number three. What was number three? Because I'm curious.
Well, the number three is then to go through your money. Stop putting your money in the pocket of somebody who's harming you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do not finance your enemy. Do not. One of the scariest things in the new Treasury justifications, there is a proposal that they require small business to do 401ks. If you're a group of small businesses in a place, for God's sakes, don't set up a 401k so all your employees take a percent of your profits and put it in big companies that come in and take your market share. Figure out a way to do a 401k where if you have a community venture fund or investment vehicle, mm-hmm. people can start to finance things locally. So, you know, stop financing your enemies. Stop financing the people who are killing you. Stop using your money to support those things that are making your world worse.
Yeah, well, there's a line I already know my brain lit up with, stop financing your enemy. I'll be using that one probably for the next 8 years.
You know, part of it is there's a terrible cycle of disrespect.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've been in boardrooms and people say, hey, you know, we can do all of this and they'll still buy from us or they'll still finance us. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, and don't think that they respect somebody who will finance their enemy. They don't.
Right, exactly. Well, Catherine, thank you so much for joining me today. It was a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, Maria. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks so much. You too. Bye. Catherine Austin Fitz, check her out at Solari.com. God, I forgot how much I enjoy interviewing her. Anyway, tomorrow, Stars Are Us with Joe Anthony, so you're going to want to stay tuned. Thanks for your support, and I'll see you guys then.